As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Rugby World Cup from The Times, with Mark Suster.
We'll be with you every week with the latest from the tournament, looking at the prospects for the home nations and the other big guns, of course, and reviewing all the action on and off the field.
Find it at thetimes.co.uk or in iTunes.
Thanks for joining me again for the game podcast bonus. We've been getting some good feedback about this format, and so hope you all like it. And if you do like it, please hit us up either via the website or on Twitter. I'm joined this week by Julien Laurens. Julien, French journalist for Le Parisien, and also something of a Paris Saint-Germain fan. And I want to get into Paris Saint-Germain here because we have an issue here where, you know, this was the biggest spending club in Europe last summer. Qatari owners, wealthy Qatari owners. I don't think there's any other kind of Qatari, but wealthy ones. Can you describe a little bit, but before we get into what they've brought, sort of the situation, the image I have of Paris Saint-Germain is a club that basically kind of has punched below its weight in terms of the fact that, you know, it's the only show in town, and a wealthy major European capital like Paris has spent a lot of money in the past, although never this much, but somehow has never been able to really put it together.
Yeah, exactly. You know, last French League title in 94, semi-final of the Champions League in 95 against AC Milan, a great team then with Ginola, with, you know, George Weah, you know, players like that, Rai, then arrived, Leonardo played not long after that. And then it was a long and empty, you know, dark tunnel for the team. It's funny you mentioned Paris because we're probably the only capital in Europe to have just one professional, like proper, you know, proper football club. When you look at other, you know, big capitals, or even other cities in Europe, they've got two, sometimes three, even more than that for London. But Paris has always struggled to have another club than PSG. So all the attention of the capital is on that club, and it's been hard the last, yeah, since 94 really. We've won some cups, you know, league cups and French FA cups, but nothing great. And I think it was a sleeping beauty, really, that club that needed something happening. They've spent money, like you said before, nothing worked. We had a lot of managers, nothing worked, and they needed a fresh start. And if it happened with money, then be it. But
why is that? Is Paris Saint-Germain was only founded as a football club in the early 70s. For those who don't know, there was a club there before, a racing club, who ended up going bankrupt in the early 60s. For nearly a decade, there was no professional top-flight football in Paris at all. And we're not talking, like, you know, at the turn of the century. We're talking about in the 1960s. It just seems remarkable. I mean, Paris, after all, this is the place where FIFA was founded. This is the place where the European Cup was founded. Mm. This is the place where, you know, Escape to Victory, even though it wasn't actually filmed there, but it's meant to be there at the Stade de Colombe, right? Yeah. That's where it happened. Is it like a French thing, like, or is it a Parisian thing? We're a little bit too cool to like football.
Yeah, it's a very Parisian
thing.
Let's
go and smoke Gaulois and
yeah, no, it's exactly that. It's for a long time, football was not a big interest in the capital. Like you said, PSG was formed in 1970, so it's a very young club if you compare it to Arsenal, who is 125 25th years, this year, for example. You know, PSG is a very, very young club, and it was because of that. The city was not a city made for football initially, and now it's becoming.
What I'm curious, though, about Paris as a city, though, this is a possibly the most cosmopolitan, major city in Europe. So it's not just the Parisians, but you've got so much immigration from different parts of Africa, from different countries, from other European countries where football is very, very big. How did that not translate? Or why did that take time to translate into, you know, major support for a major club? Was it that the immigrants kept supporting their clubs from back home? Or
yeah, they were not playing too much football. You know, don't forget that Paris was hit a lot, you know, by the two wars, obviously. And when football in England was developing quickly, football, you know, in the north of France, from Paris and above, struggled a bit in all those years, in the 40s, obviously, then the 50s, the 60s as well, because there was other things to think about. And football was not the priority.
When Nicolas Anelka is growing up in Versailles, outside Paris, presumably he and people of his generation, you know, even though if the cool, like, Parisians from 10 generations are too cool for football, people like Anelka and his ilk would be into.
Yeah, but when he grew up, you know, he was born in 78. When he grew up, that's when PSG started to be good. We were talking before the show with Paddy. That's when Gérard Houllier won the first league title. You know, I think it was 1984. So that was the years with Luis Fernandez where they're starting to build a big team, and that became a massive club. And people like Anelka, like Thierry Henry, like all those kids who were born in Paris or in the Paris area, starting following that club because it got big at that time. But before that, you know, it was nothing. It was built from nothing, and then you know, that's why that generation, only from then, you know, people starting following the club. But before that, there was nothing there.
Why is Marseille different, or Marseille or Saint-Étienne, or because the other hotbeds, like,
because Marseille is a Mediterranean city and he's got the Italian spirit in it, and I love this football forever. And it's a very old club. It's, you know, it's more than 100 years. And he came from Italy, and you know, all those Italian immigrants came to Marseille and also to Saint-Étienne and to that part of the Alps, brought their football with them. Paris didn't have any Italian immigrants at all.
Which is why it was rubbish at football, whereas the Italian immigrants who came to Marseille taught Zinedine Zidane and Samuel Nasri how to play the game.
No,
basically.
But it's true. And Paddy points were about Lens. The immigration in Lens was more from Poland than that Eastern European, and they brought some great players like Raymond Kopa and people like that. But in Paris, either there was too much of a melting pot to make football the priority for everybody. We was in Marseille, you know, and it still is the only sport in Marseille. Whereas in Paris, you've got loads of different sports in top divisions in France, but football in Marseille was different than football in Paris.
Going back to Paris Saint-Germain right now, some of the challenges that they're facing, obviously Javier Pastore story at 40 million, you know, the big signing, but he's surely not the only one. Jeremy Menez, Salvatore Sirigu, Blaise Matuidi, Kevin Gamero, of course. So he brought in all these players. One thing I wonder about is how are they going to make this work in terms of financial fair play, and also France's own internal version of it, the DCNG
DNCG.
Is that a concern? Like, do they have to just grow the revenue massively immediately?
Yeah, and I think they rely on the Qataris owners now to balance the books, to bring money.
But you can't do that with financial.
No, you can't. But for the DNCG, as long as they don't have any debts, which is the case at the moment, at least in France, they'd be fine.
So they can write a check. But in terms of the other Frenchmen at UEFA, they could run into a problem.
Yeah, it could. I think it could. I don't think they're thinking about that at the moment. At the moment, they're thinking about, okay, let's make a big impression as early as we can on the pitch, and then we see what happens with financial fair play and everything else. You know, it's a new project with loads of new people like Leonardo and loads of new players, obviously. And I think they're just focusing on the pitch now, and they're doing it well because, you know, they're obviously doing very well in France. So they're focusing about that right now, and then they think about the rest. I'm sure they find a way.
Paris Saint-Germain's stadium, the Parc des Princes, is kind of cool because it's right next to the Periphérique, the ring road, which I think was right next to the stand.
Yeah.
But it is, 42,000, 44,000?
45,000, yeah.
45,000 seat stadium. for a massive club and a massive city, you know, you wonder if at some point you shouldn't be thinking of expanding. Is that something they might look at, or would they just, given that there is a giant and I think actually really nice 80,000 seat stadium, the Stade de France, is that something that's on the horizon?
Yeah, there's no doubt they will end up there. I mean, the new owners, I've mentioned it already, that at the moment, you know, it's all the Parc des Princes, because this is obviously the stadium, the fans love it there. But for the Euro 2016, that would be in France, the Parc des Princes would be refurbished, so all of next season it would be closed. So the whole of next season, so 2012-2013, would be played at the Stade de France for PSG. So then we'll have a first impression, or a first indication at least, of what's going to happen. Will the fans turn up there massively or not? Will we have 80,000 people for the Marseille game, the Lyon game, the Bordeaux games, you know, like that? Or will they snub the new stadium because this is actually not Paris? You know, it's Saint-Denis in the suburbs. It's quite a long way from if you live in central Paris. So it'd be a good indication. And then I think after that, depending on how that season goes at the Stade de France, then they will probably make a decision sooner or later to probably go there because of the revenue ticketing will bring, because it's obviously, if you play in the Champions League and you play against Barcelona, you know, where is it much better to play, at the Stade de France or at the Parc des Princes, where you can have double the fans? So I think there's no doubt that they will end up there at some point, especially if it works with the Qataris' investment.
My final question, I mean, as a Paris Saint-Germain fan, as well as obviously journalist, given that they've had a bit of a stuttering start to the season, things are picking up now. Pastore seems to be hitting his stride as well. How do you see it? How do you see the season panning out? I mean, can we talk about, you know, maybe winning the Europa League already this year and winning the? I mean, is that where the bar has been set?
Yeah, definitely. The bar is Champions League qualification for next season, which there's no doubt they're finishing in the top three. I think they can win the league. I don't think they can win both the league and the Europa League. It would be one of them. I think they would definitely win something. In France, what you can see already is that someone like Pastore is just too good. Even when he's not playing well, he's just too good. At some point, he will score a goal, he will do something, because he's just so much above the rest of the players of the league, you know. And someone like Menez is a bit like that as well. Even when he's rubbish, he still makes a difference at some point somewhere, you know. That's how good, you know, those players are. And you see them playing now, they're not playing as a team, they're playing as 11 individuals, just now and then doing their stuff, and then it's enough to win the games. I think they will improve a lot. I think they get stronger and stronger. I think they probably win the league, not the Europa League, but win the league. And then we see, they will take it from there. They see they probably will buy some more players. Their ambition is to win the Champions League. You know, they're saying, listen, you know, it might never happen, but that's what we're aiming for. And I think it's good to have, you know, massive ambitions. Even, you know, you might think that they look a bit stupid saying, oh, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, we want to win the Champions League. I don't think it's foolish. You know, I think, you know, they've got so much money, they can definitely buy the right players to do it. And then it's just about finding the right person in the right places. So is Cambrai the right manager for that level? I don't think so. I think at some point he would have to change. Would Carlo Ancelotti would be, for example, someone perfect? I think he would be. And then, you know, as long as they would make the right choices in the key places at the club, then I think the future is really, really bright.
Well, that's the challenge out there, making Parisians fall in love with football.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code Program.